Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of Nature Now at kptz.org.
You can go right ahead.
Hello, and welcome to Nature Now. I'm your host, Nan Evans, and this week, I'm encoring a program from August of 2016. For that program, local Port Townsend naturalists Wendy Feltham, Lee Merrill, and I went on a field trip to explore the rocky intertidal biological communities at Salt Creek County Park, that's west of Port Angeles. Wendy, Lee, and I have been making these tide pooling visits to Salt Creek probably for 5, 6, or maybe even longer numbers of years. And we usually go several times a summer. We've been a couple times already this summer. Well, actually, I have to say we did miss 2019 due to the COVID restrictions, but we're back at it. And at the end of the field recording, I'll come back and share some recommendations for your own tide pool explorations. But first, let's hear this week's mystery sound. I will share its identity with you a little later in the program. Let's now check on a few observations from around our town this last week. Charlie Flashman, our dependable sound engineer, will help me with this.
Noreen Parks has been watching flocks of cedar waxwings feeding on cone-loaded Douglas firs in her neighborhood. Noreen also wonders if this might be a quote-unquote mast year or bumper crop year for Douglas firs, and if this might be related to an El Nino year. Does anyone out there in Radioland know?
And if you know, you can email us at naturenow@kptz.org. Nature Notes from Jeff Hammerson record that a new generation of adult oblique-lined tiger beetles, that's a native predatory species, and he did include a photograph in his note, has emerged from burrows in the open sandy ground along the Larry Scott Trail.
Last week, teenagers on a Cedar Root Folk School Olympic Mountain expedition in the Buckhorn Wilderness were delighted to see mountain Parnassus butterflies, blooming larkspur, black flies, cascade frogs, sharp-shinned hawks, haymaking marmots, and bountiful cutthroat trout.
And participants on the Natural History Society's recent walk at Fort Flagler found two huge bright red jellies on the beach. That was Cyanea capillata, or otherwise known as the lion's mane jelly. It's the world's largest jelly. The tentacles can grow up to 120 feet long. One of these jellies was about 12 inches in diameter, and the other about 15. They had died and lost their tentacles and then washed ashore. The beauty of this sighting is that the red bell that remained seemed to glow a deep, bright red. So, staying in the marine world, let's go to that field trip with Wendy Feltham and Lee Merrill. To set the stage for this field recording, we've just arrived early on a July morning. It's raining. And we've walked out to explore the tide pools. Our equipment for our low tide explorations included really good rubber boots with a sturdy tread on the bottom, all-weather gear, laminated field guide sheets, cameras, and hiking sticks for balance, to point at submerged critters, and to move seaweed aside in the deep tide pools to see what was hiding underneath. So we have come to Salt Creek County Park. It's west of Port Angeles. It's a rocky point that goes out into the strait. And I'm here with Wendy Feltham and Lee Merrill. We've worked our way out to the end of the point. We followed the tide as it's going out, and we've just gotten to the... Oh, giant green anemones are amazing in this tide pool.
Yeah, they're about 10 inches across, I'd say.
And they are absolutely beautiful, different shades of green and turquoise and olive green. It sure seems to me there are a lot more of these giant green anemones than there have been in past years.
Well, and even when we were out here a month ago, I don't remember as many, and I don't remember as many higher up in the mussel beds like this.
Exactly. There are dozens right around us here that I don't remember seeing a month ago.
Going. Oh, there, down tucked in there is a sea cucumber.
Cucumaria miniata, the orange. Sea cucumber.
Sometimes called the California.
The California is the big one.
The bigger one? Okay.
Yeah. And also you can see there are a couple of blood stars over here.
I don't see those.
Right over here. Mussels.
And chitons.
Thatched barnacles and black leather chitons. And right behind there, there are a couple of blood sea stars.
So I want to get over and have a look at those because those are some of my favorite critters.
And then this is where we start to see the urchins. There are three kinds of urchins that we see a lot of around here.
Oh, that was one.
And the purple urchins are right in here. It's raining so hard.
Yeah, so we saw one of the purple urchins in a tide pool just coming out here. Oh, there, I'm seeing. There's some over there. Yeah. Oh, and now I see the blood star.
Uh-huh.
The bright orange. And the thatched barnacles are the ones that have got all this sort of superstructure around them, right?
They look like little thatched roofs in old England. If it weren't raining so hard, we would be able to see them feeding underwater. But right now we really can't see anything through
right.
the water because of all the raindrops. Then over here, those are much larger barnacles. Those are the giant acorn barnacles.
And you see them quite a ways up the intertidal. But not quite as big as that one over there is.
Yeah, that's
but,
a really large one. What's fun about those is when the barnacle dies, it leaves a big hollow area, like a crater. And there are animals that like to find their home in there. So I always look in the empty ones because you can sometimes find pygmy rock crabs that fit right inside. And they keep have that as their home and they just come out to feed. And you can also, if you're underwater, you can also find grunt sculpins that have evolved to have a long nose.
And because there were some at the Marine Science Center a couple years ago that lived in the barnacle cases.
And for predators, they look like a live barnacle, so they are protected by the case and by their long nose that looks like a live barnacle.
Actually, the rain on the surface is really quite pretty. If you look at the patterns, but it also makes me think that these animals are adapted to an amazing variety of situations. On a sunny day, the water could evaporate from this tide pool, increasing the salinity. And now on a rainy day, it's decreasing the salinity. It's fresh water. Particularly amazed by the sea anemones. They're soft, and yet they can live in that wide variety of salinities.
Rocky intertidal areas along the west coast of North America are some of the richest and most diverse places in the world. In the lowest zone, the diversity is huge. Here, we pause for a few minutes to look at the many different species of seaweed. Of course, the term seaweed is just a colloquial term for a wide assortment of multicellular macroscopic marine algae.
Picking our way pretty carefully, the big mussels are usually pretty easy to carefully walk on, but they're just covered with the thing called sea lettuce, which is the bright green thin layers. And now, Wendy, what are we looking at there?
But here we have some beautiful seaweeds, and I love some of the common names. Like this rough one, all bumpy with big broad leaves, is known as sea cabbage. And then you mentioned the sea lettuce, which is soft and bright green. And over here we have what are called sea grapes, which really look like bunches of grapes. They're sort of elongated and shiny dark brown grapes, but you could call those, I mean, they really do look like grapes.
Or they sort of look like bunches of underinflated blooms.
They do, yes. And that beautiful fluffy seaweed is called green rope, and it does look kind of like rope, or like velvet, actually, sort of velvet rope.
So that's the same thing that's here, right?
Isn't it pretty?
It is pretty.
Really soft. And then this down here is just some beginning of the feather boa, which is such an amazing seaweed with a very rough texture. And this is too short to show why it's called feather boa, but when it's fully developed, you could hang it around your neck like
a
scarf.
And it feels like it's got those little boa feathers off on the edges.
Right. And then, of course, there's this pink encrusting seaweed over here, which is in the red seaweed family.
Sometimes that's called calcareous seaweeds,
yes,
too.
Yes, calcareous. And this
or calcareous algae.
This one is an encrusting one, bright pink, quite beautiful. So there's a lot of different colors of seaweed in this area. Oh, I think this one is Elaria.
Oh, yeah.
Called winged kelp. It has a long stipe, and I always thought it was named winged kelp because it looks like long wings, but in fact it's called that because of these smaller wings of kelp
near
the base of it.
Yeah, I thought so too, because the blade kind of looks like bat wings or something.
Yes.
To me. But it's because of those little guys at the
base.
Interesting.
Which we don't see very often unless you're at a low tide, right?
Right.
So.
Oh, we have a break in the rain.
Oh, good.
Another thing to take along on a low tide excursion is a curious and exploring spirit. In the next bit, we find a couple of really strange things.
It could be, it's probably sponge. Look at
it. So Wendy's pulled up this very strange looking thing. Sort of looks like a size of a big ear of corn.
Uh-huh.
Growing around a kelp stipe. And it's sort of yellow with some green, and we're thinking maybe sponge.
Maybe sponge, because look here, there's like tiny volcanoes on it.
And which would be where the water would come in and come out.
And let me see if it crumbles, in which case, it crumbles. It's probably breadcrumb sponge.
I was thinking, was that breadcrumb sponge? Yeah.
Yeah. Because it just crumbles when you touch it with your fingernail. Look at that.
But it's a really dense colony.
And I think growing on top of the, it's yellow toward the center, sort of orangey yellow, and then a slightly greenish.
And then very dark
is sort some of encrusting green seaweed. Very unusual.
Yeah. How curious.
All the greens in it. It's pretty.
These are beautiful. These are the gooseneck barnacles. A lot of different species of barnacles in Port Townsend, but not these.
Because they really are more of an open coast.
Yes.
Kind of thing, which is what's great about this particular location. You get both the sheltered water species and some of the open rocky coast species.
It's such a beautiful barnacle. It looks kind of like scales at the pointed end, but the reason it's called gooseneck is because of this part, which you can't usually see. It's
a
softer.
A stalk or a neck,
A leathery kind of neck that looks a bit like a gooseneck.
But they are related to our sort of ordinary barnacles, except for this fleshy stalk, making them look quite different.
Dinosaur toes.
Dinosaur toes, Lee just said. Boy, really, they do look like it. And they, so these little pockets here and there. Which sort of makes me want to tell the tale of, I'm not quite sure how the barnacle got the name gooseneck barnacle, other than maybe it does in fact look like a neck. But in Europe, there's a bird, a shorebird, called the barnacle goose. And the story, whether it's true or not, I don't know, is that early Europeans didn't really know how either these barnacle toes or the gooseneck barnacles or the barnacle goose reproduced. The barnacle goose, of course, migrated, so they didn't see it throughout the year. And somehow they got it in their heads that this creature that we now call the gooseneck barnacle was a young phase of the barnacle goose. So we have the barnacle goose and the gooseneck barnacle as being different life stages of the same creature. Of course, that is complete fantasy. But I really do like Lee's description of them as dinosaur toes.
When I got home after our low tide excursion, I did a little bit of researching about the barnacle goose, gooseneck barnacle story. That story is true. And oddly, even into the 15th and 16th century, devout Christians were allowed to eat the barnacle geese on holy days when eating meat was forbidden. That was because their supposed life cycle association with the gooseneck barnacle meant that they were neither flesh nor born of flesh, therefore not meat, therefore edible, on those holy days. In addition to exploring the tide pools, another great place to look is under rock ledges. In this next segment, Wendy and I are squatting down looking at the fascinating variety of animals that we see in just a couple of square feet under a huge overlooming rock ledge.
So, Wendy, we're under this rock ledge. Wow, what are we seeing?
Well, what's amazing under this ledge is all the little holes that have been carved into the rock and the animals living in them. Like here we have purple urchins that are living in the holes. Here there's a chitin that has squeezed its body into the hole. Here there are limpets, another chitin here, a whelk over here. Here, side by side, we have a couple of keyhole limpets that live abundantly here at Salt Creek. And if you look at this keyhole limpet, you can see it, the soft part of its body under the shell.
And it's a couple inches long.
It's a big one. And sticking out of the end, you see a little bit of a worm. A sort of cream-colored commensal. I think it's a red-banded commensal worm that lives underneath the shell of this keyhole limpet. And they live symbiotically. I'm not sure what the relationship is exactly, but you sometimes will see that.
That's interesting. And then these limpets are
These are plate limpets.
So they're plate sort of limpets. Flattish.
They're almost like a dinner plate.
Yeah. They still have that kind of cone overall shape, but it's a very flat cone.
This is a great place for limpets. In fact, over there we just saw the unstable limpet, which is a very interesting limpet. I'd never seen one alive until just now. But if you put the shell down in a flat surface, it wobbles.
Well, and it was much more narrow than these guys are.
Yes. I'm not positive. See this hole? Inside is a little crab that may be a pygmy rock crab, but I can't really tell.
Well hidden in there.
It is. These are giant acorn barnacles.
And here's one down there that just opened a bit, I think, to test.
To see if it's underwater. Yeah. Oh, and look, a hermit crab. See the white dots on its legs?
On its legs, yeah.
That's a hairy hermit crab. And it has a very hairy body, and it likes to find a shell that is quite small for it. Funny thing about that hermit crab.
And here are
tube worms.
Tube worms. The
feather duster tube worms. These are very short, so they're not the northern feather duster that has the
really long,
beautiful burgundy and deep gray-green feathery tentacles. These are a different type. I'm not sure what type, because they're very short.
Yeah, and the worm itself is way down in there. Tide's out.
See if I can get a picture inside this shell, in this hole of the crab.
So a bit of tide pool etiquette. Take only photos, not specimens. Look carefully. And if you must pick up a creature, do so very carefully so that you do not damage any of the sensitive parts. And then always replace it to exactly
where you found it. Well, we poked around, exploring more of what we could see, and then towards the end of our time in the low tide, we had this experience.
Okay, look at this. Isn't it gorgeous?
It is gorgeous. So what we've just stumbled on out here is a probably foot and a half across, maybe?
Yeah.
Mottled starfish, which is the biggest one we've seen in the last couple of years, in a sort of a blue-gray
on top of orange brown.
Right.
It's gorgeous.
And I'm just thrilled to see it and see it large, and it appears healthy. Lee, what do you think?
Sometimes you have to touch.
Yeah, this feels, doesn't feel like very full though. It's sort of,
they deflate when they come up out of water.
Yeah.
Release some of the water, but no, he feels healthy. He doesn't have any lesions, which is the first sign of sea star wasting. This one's beautiful.
It's exciting too. It's beautiful and exciting.
Looks very healthy. Especially because he just got picked up and he's really clamped down now on the rock. This arm is
good for it.
Wow. How exciting.
And also right around here we're seeing the red urchins.
Yeah,
we'd already seen purple and green, and here's a red one, and there's one over there. And these are the urchins that can live up to 200 years.
I find that just astounding. 200 years. Wow.
Uh-oh, the tide's coming in.
Yep.
Yeah.
I wonder if they change.
Oh, yes, right there. There is the tide. It's coming around our boots.
We better get out of here.
Yeah.
Sadly, the tide came in and we left this glorious world. But I will return, because for me, those low tide biological communities are endlessly fascinating. I certainly encourage listeners to discover it for yourselves and to take advantage of the many low tide walks offered by the Port Townsend Marine Science Center. Well, let's go back to that mystery sound. Let's hear it again. That was the call of a brown creeper. This summer, I have been enjoying this little bird as it works its way up the trunks of the grand firs and Douglas firs in my yard. A brown creeper uses its long, down-curved bill to forage for bark insects and spiders. It starts at the bottom of the trunk, and they work their way up the tree to within several feet of the top. Then they fly down to the bottom of another tree, or sometimes the same one, to begin again. Well, many of our listeners will know that the summer months are really the very best times for exploring those low tide ecosystems during the daytime hours. The next good tide pulling dates this summer are the mornings of Thursday, August the 19th, through Sunday, August the 22nd. So you need to be certain to check a tide chart, and you can find one online, for your specific locality to determine the actual time of the lowest tides. If you're in Port Townsend, just a tip, I usually use the tide station that's at Admiralty Head, because I go tide pooling mostly around North Beach, and that's the closest station. If you're down in town or in the bay, use the tide station at Point Hudson. And a tip for tide pooling is to arrive at the beach at least an hour or so before the low tide, or the lowest of the low tide, and you can follow the tide out, and that gives you more time to kind of poke and explore. Let me also share some of my favorite low tide guidebooks and resources. So first, there are three books that are really local to the Pacific Northwest that are fun little books with lots of pictures. First one is called Whelks to Whales by Rick Harbo. Second one is called The Beachcomber's Guide to the Pacific Northwest by Duane Sept. And the third one is the National Audubon Society Field Guide to the Pacific Northwest. So those are sort of three basically good books.
The laminated field guide sheets that we were using out at Salt Creek, there's a great set that's put out by the Periwinkle Press in Oak Harbor on Whidbey Island. The set of sheets covers our local intertidal seaweeds, the seagrasses, and the intertidal invertebrates that are really specific to this kind of sheltered part of the Salish Sea. And they're really great and they're really sturdy. There's another set of pretty user-friendly, fold-out, water-resistant field guides that come out of Harbor Publishing, and there's a little set of a fold-out brochure on the sea stars, another on the nudibranchs, another on seaweeds, and another on the various seashells and shellfish. And if you want to even go a little deeper, I have got to share my classic book for explaining the ecology of the intertidal. This is a book, it's called Between Pacific Tides. Most of the ecosystems they're exploring are Californian, but they're very applicable to our area. And it was written by Ed Ricketts. And some of you who are Steinbeck fans will know that Ed Ricketts is the character that John Steinbeck used to create the character called Doc in his book, Cannery Row. And those of you who are really extra special John Steinbeck fans will know that the Western Flyer, which is being restored down at the Shipwrights Co-op here in Port Townsend, was the boat that John Steinbeck and Ed Ricketts took to explore the Sea of Cortez on their sort of funny yet truly scientific exploration that is Steinbeck wrote about in a book called The Log of the Sea of Cortez. Also, one last quick point. Want to let everyone know that the Port Townsend Marine Science Center Museum and Aquarium are now open on Saturdays and Sundays from noon until 5 p.m. with COVID responsible behavior. Well, we've come to the end. This is been Nature Now. We hope you've enjoyed our program of authentic and eclectic news and information about the natural community where we live.
Today's closing music is Low Tide, performed by Michael Jerome Brown.
I never ask questions, so nobody knows. I look at the place where the blue water is. To myself, it's low tide again, low tide again. All that was hidden is now sandlocked. No use pretending, it's low tide again. Where the trees touch the sky.